Joining us this morning is Eddie Henderson on the telephone from, I would imagine, Nueva York, New York is where you're
from. New York. Home.
Yeah, from New York. And Eddie, welcome to KUVO and the morning set, your new recording, Witness to History. When I saw that name, I go, man, he owns this. He owns this. You know, when I went back over your 83 years and read about your background and so forth, first teacher being Louis Armstrong, and bringing it all the way to the present day. I was so impressed with everything. And not that I hadn't been listening to you all of these years, but just the way that you were able to capsulize and put all of this stuff together in just 8 tracks and with such great musicians.
Yeah, it's been quite an experience for me looking back in the trajectory of my whole life experience. You know, it amazes me sometimes when I think back about it, it seems like another person, but I do remember in my memory bank that was me. It's kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, well, when you look at and by the way, before I go any further, I have to acknowledge the great liner notes from Sean Brady out of Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah.
Man, he did an amazing job. How somebody can put all this stuff together just on like 4 flaps here on the CD, or 5 actually, because he used the other back part too.
I know. My whole life is just in little 4 little flaps.
Well, it's more than most, I'll tell you that. Just to dig in just a little bit, a couple of things that stood out to me on the record was, number one, Donald Harrison is one of my favorite people. I've known him over 25 years. Last time I saw you, Doctor, was here in Denver at Dazzle with the Cookers.
And, that's right.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah, and I came back and just said hello and so forth. And Donald and I
do remember that.
Yeah, and Donald and I go back to when I've always known about him, but
right.
I met him with during the when he was touring with the Eddie Palmieri Latin Jazz Sextet. And Donald's always been this musicologist who's done so much for basically broadening the horizons of music, and you know, to bust down barriers and just say, hey, you know what, music is music, and it's what you feel and how you express it.
Yeah, Donald is a true genius. He knows so much about music ethnology, the history of where this ethnic tradition of jazz comes from. I mean, you know, I learn so much every time I talk to him. And of course, learn so much from him every time I play with him. He and I just have a natural, innate chemistry of blending with each other. And I think it's self-evident when you listen to the records. I just can't call anybody just because they have a name. Donald Harrison is my favorite.
When you start off the album with Scorpio Rising, which goes back to that early fusion days,
exactly
that blew my mind, because that was kind of my intro
album, or from Bitches Brew,
yes, all of that stuff,
early 70s, late 60s,
and you know, I kind of think back on, because what you did with Scorpio Rising this time around, I was saying, you know what, that should have been the evolution of fusion, instead of the labels taking over and basically making this a commercialized regurgitating the same old stuff to sell albums.
I know. I totally concur with what you just said. Yeah, because I think the advent of the concept of fusion was when Miles Davis did Bitches Brew. And I think when I joined Herbie Hancock's iconic Mwandishi sextet, they took the ball and ran with it. And that gave me my first major influence of that kind of music about open skies, you know, where I could actually perform it through my instrument with the best people in the world. And so it really honed my style up to the present.
Yeah, and it's still, and the music is still relevant because you've proven that you can bring something unique and different 50 years later to the same piece.
Isn't that something?
yeah.
George, comes age.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, doctor.
Oh, no, no, I was finished.
Okay.
Yeah. If it's of a high quality, then it becomes ageless. You're just locked into a certain decade or not. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. As a man who's been on the air, since the 60s, I can tell you that I can go back and I can listen to certain tunes, certain things that are exactly that, ageless, and that you know there are people out there who can say, wow, this, and it doesn't matter if it's jazz or pop or rock or whatever, it's a feeling, it's a certain thing that people can connect to. There's things that I can hear from, for example, Jimi Hendrix, that are still part of the lexicon of moving the music forward, but still having that background. In Jimmy's case, it was always the background in the blues. You know, he never wanted to fall out of that, because that was his backbone.
Yeah, well, he did that with the T.
Yeah. Hey, George Cables. Now, I met George for the first time in the late 70s. I think he was for a while for Bobby Hutcherson, but it was really with Dexter Gordon is when I got involved. And George obviously is part of the Cookers as well.
Yes, yes. So, well, I love George Cables. And I first became aware of him, of course, because I used to live in San Francisco for 30 years of my life. And then George used to live out there and also in New York. And I used to see Bobby Hutcherson and George playing with Bobby, with Dexter also. But I think my first encounter with George was with him with Joe Henderson. And then after that, of course, with Freddie Hubbard, all those years he worked with Freddie. And I've always admired his playing, his personality. And so he has been an invaluable asset to my musical being. And, you know, on records, listening to him, being inspired by him, and also getting the opportunity to actually play with him. It's been a ball. And then, especially with the Cookers, we've been together like 17 years now. And I think that's a very important band to have the longevity that it has had with all these major players. And each player in the Cookers is a leader in their own right. And so it's really a pleasure to go to work with those wonderful musicians.
So how did the title Witness to History come to you? It sounds so appropriate in your case.
Yeah.
It's just because of not just longevity, but the fact that you had this connection to Louis Armstrong to the present.
Yeah, well, my connection with Louis Armstrong, like that, my mother was in the original Cotton Club and knew him, introduced to me to Louis Armstrong. My first two lessons on the trumpet when I was 9 years old, you know, I was so immature, I didn't know that was going to turn into the rest of my life. And then after that, you know, but his music really, I was too musically immature. And then when I was in high school, my stepfather was the doctor to famous musicians like Miles Davis, Cannonball Adderley, Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Billie Holiday. So when I came home from my trumpet lesson in San Francisco, guess who was staying at the house? Miles Davis. For 2 weeks, he was doing an engagement at the Blackhawk. So Miles took me to his gig, just myself and Miles in his car. And in his band, he had Cannonball Adderley, John Coltrane, Wynton Kelly, Paul Chambers, and Philly Joe Jones. Hmm. When I heard the first note, the light went on in my head, and I said, there it is. That's what I wanted the rest of my life. And that was the beginning. I mean, that's when the music really touched my soul and sparked, inspiration for the rest of my life.
Right.
And had a very lucky trajectory. So then after that, I was just like following Miles Davis's sound career, his music, around like a little puppy dog. And then when I went back to school, medical school in Washington, D.C., each weekend I would run up to New York for 4 years, drive up to New York, and that's when I found out of a Freddie Hubbard and Lee Morgan. I would go to their house and listen to them practice, club hop with them. They'd let me sit in, and music became more and more important to me as time and events went on. But I was so close to finishing medical school. I said, let me finish this first, because I remember Art Blakey asked me to join him in my third year of medical school. I said, well, if you like me now, you really like me after I get my credentials in order and finish school. And lo and behold, when I did finish, you know, Herbie Hancock hired me, actually on a fluke accident, because Johnny Coles, his regular trumpet player, was on sabbatical. And so that was the beginning of the Herbie Hancock iconic Mwandishi sextet. That lasted for three and a half years. Soon as that ended, then Art Blakey called me, and everybody else, my heroes, started calling me. Joe Henderson, Dexter Gordon, Jackie McLean, Elvin Jones, McCoy Tyner. Because of the stint that I did with Herbie, they took the attitude, well, your credentials in order, you play with Herbie. And so I had a lucky trajectory how the door opened, you know, for all the people that I never dreamed that I would be playing with by my stint with Herbie Hancock. So it was unbelievable. So looking back at that witness to history, first from Louis Armstrong to Miles Davis, Freddie Hubbard, and on and on and on, Herbie Hancock, Art Blakey, you know, I've witnessed the history for the last 50 years. And I thought on this album, why not make this a commemoration to what my life was about musically? And aha, came up with the title, Witness to History. And I think it was apropos. Part of my way to pick each phase of my witness to history in chronological order to show step by step the progression, to show where I'm at in the present day.
Dr. Henderson, you're going to be here in our community very shortly. It's all part of the CU Denver Music and Entertainment Studies program, revolving around theorizing African-American music, and you'll be performing as well some standards.
I'm going to be observing some young Latin group in Denver,
okay,
and just for a half hour,
right,
listening to them play, and the gentleman out there, Mark Rabideau, more or less the producer, co-producer of this film, he said, listen to them, and they're kind of beginners in improvisation. Just give them some pointers on improvisation.
Okay.
And so the other thing is, I'm supposed to play maybe a half hour, 40 minutes with a local group out there, probably some standards, and then perform the same night with the choir there. I think a Duke Ellington piece.
Let's talk a little bit about medical school. So, pardon the word possessed, but what what possessed you? What? How did you get attracted to being, you were a psychoanalyst, a psychiatrist? What drew you to want to do that in specific?
To go into medicine?
Yeah.
Well, when I was 14 years old, my real father died when I was 9. My mother remarried this very prominent doctor in San Francisco when I was 14. And he and I did not get along that well. And so he told me, as a young kid, adolescent kid, I was 14 or 15, and he told me that he was a doctor, the closest thing to God, and I wasn't not as smart as him, and I was going to be a bum on the waterfront. Well, he told the wrong person. So that, I said, oh yeah, watch. So I really just wanted to play music. But since he challenged me like that, I went out of my way to go to medical school to prove him wrong.
Wow.
That's the reverse motivation for going to medical school. But something I had to do, because I didn't like the way he treated my mother, so I really wanted to prove him wrong.
Yeah.
And so after I became a doctor, that's when I joined right away, had my license and everything. And so Herbie Hancock hired me. So I left the hospital. He says, well, I don't understand why you can stop being a doctor to be a musician. Well, actually, he wanted to be a musician, but had no talent. So I told him, I said, well, you know, first of all, that's not for you to understand. It's for me to understand. And by the way, I can do what you do, but you can't do what I do. Now,
you told Herbie that?
My stepfather's name was
Your
Herbie.
Stepfather. I see. Yeah. Good. Let's clarify that.
Exactly. So it was all worthwhile. I studied. I never missed a class in my life, whether it was elementary school, high school, college, or medical school.
Yeah.
But medical school, I would go to school every day from 8 to 5, never missed a class. But every night after I'd go to school, studying for 3 hours, then every night I'd go out to the jazz club trying to learn how to play. And my other classmates would say, ooh, you're going to flunk out. You're going to jazz club. They never came to class. I wouldn't see them. And they tried to cram, and they flunked out. And in terms of psychiatry, the only reason I picked psychiatry after I finished my internship in medical school was because if I went into surgery, pediatrics, gynecology, pathology, it would be for another 4 years residency every other night. But when I saw the on-call schedule to psychiatry, the on-call schedule was once every 45 days. So that gave me more chance to play the trumpet. So that was my motivation. However, after I finished the residency, I never practiced psychiatry, just general practice for 12 years in Francisco.
Okay. Yeah, because the last question I had for you in dealing with psychiatry was, you know, jazz, man, there's all kinds of wild cats out there. I was kind of curious, man, as to see if anybody ever approaches, say, hey, man, Dr. Henderson, I need some help, man, and, you know, can I come see you?
You know, people do come to me saying that. Yeah. And I said, well, first of all, I have to get off the couch first before you lay down.
I love it.